The Monday Morning Tech Chat Show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is, of course, the premier audiobook service, perfect for folks who want their books read to them. Thousands and thousands of titles to choose from in all genres, sci-fi, fantasy, biographies, history, thrillers, mysteries, and more. We've got a great offer for listeners on this podcast, 2 free audiobooks when you sign up. And those books are yours to keep even if you decide to cancel your Audible subscription, which is $14.95 a month and gives you a free book every month of your choosing, as well as some other fun perks. Membership has its privileges. Hit up bit.ly/geekbookclub to start your free trial and get those 2 free books on lock. Once again, bit.ly/geekbookclub. And now, let's get into the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another SGGQA podcast, tech news, Monday morning tech show. I am Juan Carlos Bagnell, the Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. And the QA stands for question and answer. I like to make these an interactive discussion. I like to host my podcast on a Monday, so we've had time to kind of work out some of the tech stories of the last week. Maybe there's been some breaking news. I was running up to the last minute prepping this podcast because the entire second half of this is breaking news with more YouTube drama unfolding over the last couple days. We spent some time talking about YouTube drama last week. We're going to spend some time talking about YouTube drama this week. Already seeing some folks jumping into the live chat with Aditya Anil. I'm seeing Matt Tyler. I'm seeing Gary the Fireman. I'm seeing Joshua Luther. What's up? What's up, Josh? Or Joshua. Soulless Geek made it. Morning, y'all. And I keep saying this. I want to try and build some time into the end of this podcast, probably around that 2-hour mark, for questions for products that I'm working on reviews for. So we've got the G8X, we've got the Pixel 4, we've got the Asus ROG 2, the Xperia 5, all kinds of letters and numbers of tech products. And also, I'll be teasing it throughout. I am hosting a podcast with Audio Technica to give away a super killer, awesome gaming headset. So we got a lot to talk about. Gary the Fireman is already calling plus or minus 15 minutes. It's the over-under on housekeeping today. I don't know, drop some comments. How long do you think I'm going to go talking about housekeeping? Because we actually have a little housekeeping to deal with this Monday morning. I got a few things out last week, and I'm super proud of me. One of them was a pretty epically long video to shoot and to put together. Matt Tyler saying over 15. Soulless Geek is saying over. No one has confidence that I can get housekeeping done in under... Matt Tyler, 22 minutes and 13 seconds. All right, okay, we're going to do this. I'm going to beat 15 minutes for housekeeping come hell or high water. What time is it now? 9:03 in the a.m. Let's jump into some housekeeping. Immediately, I reviewed some super fancy headphones on SomeGadgetGuy.com. You can check out the Meze 99 Classics in walnut and silver, premium audio headset. Some really fun cables and additions and all built around these walnut ear cups. They're actually wooden ear cups. And I spent some time with my ears in those, and I think they're an interesting alternative to some of the classic audio and recording brands that I love to talk about. Again, they're not cheap, but they're also not stupid expensive, considering the amount of labor involved in making a wooden ear cup. Moving right along, this is the big tease. If you're watching this, and especially if you're watching this on the Twitch, you might occasionally like to play a video game. And sometimes, if you play a video game, you might like good audio. And if you play video games in any kind of social capacity, like you play games and you talk to other people, if you're using a cheap headset or maybe just like the earbuds that came with your phone, your teammates probably hate you for abusing their ears. They elected me to let you know that your audio sucks. If it sucks, it probably sucks. So tech, I'm thankful for high quality audio headsets, and I'm hosting a Thanksgiving giveaway. Again, it's sort of implied with the tech I'm thankful for. And the folks at Audio Technica reached out, and they liked my review of the ATH G1WL, which is one of the best wireless headsets I've ever used. It's a fully wireless, zero lag gaming headset from a company that makes phenomenal headsets and microphones. So you could clear up those problems with how terrible your gaming audio truly is. So, Soulless Geek, I mean, cheap headsets are just another form of psychological torture. From Joshua Luther, I think you should review the Soundpeats True Wireless Earbuds. I've been using them for a few months with Comply Foam tips, and I'm very happy with them. See, again, if you're using them with Comply Foam tips, that means you'd never be able to use AirPods Pro. I just thought I'd sneak that in there because AirPods Pro use a proprietary earpiece. Back to the contest. Yeah, this is one of the best headsets I reviewed all year. I'm going to give away one of these headsets to someone. I'm going to announce the winner on Thanksgiving. You've got about a week left to enter the contest. And I like to reward participation. I do not like my contests going to Twitter channels that are just contest junkie channels. So this is a random draw, but you know, there are the normal contest entries. Like if you follow me, you get 1 point. And if you follow Audio Technica on Twitter, you get 1 point. But if you're willing to actually participate, if you're willing to actually engage and do something, I'm going to try and hook you up with a ton more entries. So I'm an audio nerd. I make videos online. So I thought, why not see if people could rise to the challenge and show me or tell me why they need a better headset? So I've already gotten a couple YouTube entries. There are rules, like you have to follow the rules as to how you're disclosing and what you're saying and how much time you have. But I've already gotten a few folks hooking up some videos saying like, hey, I need a better headset because I'm terrible for my teammates. And I want to give those people a ton more entries than just the contest junkie channels, YouTube accounts, Twitter accounts that just like click, 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 click on contests all day. That's not a valuable member of my community. I want to reward the people that actually participate. So let me get this out of here. And Soulless Geek, Josh, you almost got him sidetracked on AirPods again. It was pretty close because the next story in housekeeping is about the AirPods. The title of the article on SomeGadgetGuy.com, Apple Premium E-Waste and Normalizing Disposability. This isn't a video. This is an article, an editorial that I wrote up. I am making it part of my campaign, a part of my mission moving forward, that we're going to talk about hearing health and right to repair more. This is going to become a bigger part of the discussion and a bigger part of how I'm reviewing products moving forward. And I've gotten a lot of really angry Apple fanboys, all playing the whataboutism game. Well, what about all those other companies that are also doing things like AirPods? Why don't you criticize them? Well, I feel all companies that make products AirPod style should be criticized. Who's leading the charge? Who's the most profitable company at making earbuds and audio gear disposable? I would hope that anyone listening to this podcast will go and give this article a read. There is a trend happening in making really expensive, mediocre headphones as disposable and as non-repairable as possible. That according to Apple, every 2 years, you should be happy to spend $200, $250, $300 on a pair of okay earbuds. When I was coming up, $200 monitors, like studio grade headphones, that seemed like such an outlandish purchase for a lot of people. Like, why would you spend $200 on headphones? But those headphones are now into their second decade of use, and I wholly expect I'll probably get another two decades of use out of them with care and with maintenance. So, you know, maybe getting some new ear pads there. I might splurge on a replacement cable and see if I can really run them out. So, like, for 30 years of use, I spent $300. There is no consumer electronics today that you can buy that you would have the expectation that this is going to last me two decades. And now Apple is normalizing the idea that okay, convenient audio should be recycled and repurchased every couple of years. That is not the audio future I want for me. That is not the audio future I want for anyone. Please give the article a read. Please give the article a share if that's an idea or a concept that resonates with you. This isn't necessarily a slam on True Wireless. True Wireless is going to be one of the early offenders of terrible, terrible business practice. But there could be a silver lining to this if we follow the lead of companies like Samsung and Creative with their True Wireless that are repairable. Again, I had a bunch of Apple nerds coming at me, no one makes the... Like, you don't pay attention because you're only on humping Apple's leg when it comes to products. If you were a tech enthusiast and not an Apple fanboy, you would know that there are a couple other companies out there that are making more responsible versions of these types of products. And that's the direction I want us to start going when we're talking about things like Bluetooth inconvenience. We can do better than this. This is not how this market should go down. And I still want the availability of cabled audio for people that really do care about their ears. We are in a 10-year growing epidemic of hearing loss. I just got an email from a PR company. The hot new trend in hearables will be the hot new trend in wearable technology. Do you know what hearables are? Hearables is a fancy term for the halfway point between headphones and hearing aids. So for people who can't afford actual hearing aids, there's going to be this hot new trend of earbuds and headphones and headsets that all help you hear better because you're going deaf. The people in their 20s and 30s are already starting to find that they might need hearing assistance in daily life. That's what we're creating with these types of products, and they're super expensive, and they're terrible for the planet. This is not okay. I'm gonna keep whining about this, and I hope a few more of you will join me in my crusade. This isn't like vision. You know, we've stigmatized hearing aids. If someone's wearing glasses, no big deal. You needed to wear some glasses. Oh, someone's wearing hearing aids. Man, if they're young and they're wearing hearing aids, that must be really bad. Like, what are we doing? This is awful. So, yes, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but this is more than just us sitting around in a circle patting each other on the back for being cleverer than the average bears. These are the discussions we need to be leading with our family and friends. If you see a family member using AirPods, have these conversations. Try not to be a jerk about it, but have these conversations that they need to be setting volume limits on their iPhone, that they should not be cranking up the volume when they're in busy environments, and that they need to get these things to a proper recycling center in their community or back to an Apple store, even though there's probably not a lot that you can do to recycle AirPods. They probably just get mulched. They try and retrieve the battery so it doesn't explode on them, and then that's about it. But still, they should not be ending up in landfills, and we've got to do a better job of protecting even grown-ups' hearings, because we are batting the hell out of people's ears right now. And Lastly, to wrap up housekeeping, let's get this back here. I did an epic, super awesome thermal torture test on 4 super awesome high performance phones. Again, SomeGadgetGuy.com, smartphone thermal throttle test, Pixel 4 XL versus LG V50 versus OnePlus 7T versus Asus ROG Phone 2. So I got a criticism that when I do a video rendering test, that it's not long enough. I take 6 clips and I stitch them together to make a 1-minute final project with a watermark and transitions and a soundtrack. And whenever someone's phone loses in one of those comparisons and one of those benchmarks, they always come out with me, well, the real people wouldn't do the test like that. And so my phone is better because I bought my phone and my phone is better than a phone that I didn't buy. So even though my phone lost this test, it doesn't matter. And that's not how people use their phones. So I disagree, obviously, because I want people to get more use out of their super expensive phones, not the same use we've been doing for the last 10 years. Like, if you're buying an expensive phone and you're checking your email on it, then you've wasted your money. And again, I would hope that you are having these conversations with your family and friends. What are you doing on your phone? You're Twittering and you're making phone calls? Then why are you buying a top-of-the-line Galaxy or iPhone? Buy the mid-range. You're gonna do fine. But if you step up, I do believe there is a good reason to step up to over $700 devices. So I ran these 4 phones together because there are ideas about how these things perform. Everyone sort of agreed the Pixel 4 XL is garbage. In this test, it is not garbage. No one's talking about the V50, or a lot of people are telling me that the V50 is overpriced because it's a $1,000 phone, but there's no other 5G capable device that plays in the same ballpark. You might not value 5G, but it's a dumb comparison to put, like, someone tried to tell me, like, well, why would I buy a V50 if I can get a Galaxy S10e for a half a ham sandwich? And you're like, because the V50 is a better phone, like, all around. And you pay a little bit more for having specs and performance and extra radios that are just brutally better than what you get on a Galaxy S10e. This shouldn't be that hard. But again, I'm not talking to a tech enthusiast there. I'm talking to a Samsung fanboy. So I thought, why not address some of these concerns that my rendering test is too short? So I had these 4 phones re-render an entire feature film. They transcoded my Blu-ray rip of A Fish Called Wanda. And I wanted to make that video just a little bit more phone storage friendly. It was a 4 gigabyte file. They squished it down into a 1 gigabyte file. It's a 1 hour and 48 minute long movie. And I think the results are very surprising, not only over which phone finished first, but how long it took each phone to finish the test. And each phone is sort of representative of a different type of hardware-software combination. We've got 2 phones on Android 9, 2 phones on Android 10. We've got 2 phones with Snapdragon 855 pluses. We've got two phones with Snapdragon 855s. We've got 2 phones that have no special thermal hardware. We've got 1 phone with a heat pipe and 1 phone with a vapor chamber. And then we've got 2 phones using an older style of file system and 2 phones using a newer style of file system. So between these 4 phones, there is no hardware software combination left off the table for a premium phone. Check out the test. I think many of you who haven't already probably will be surprised. Not just over who finished first, but the disparity of performance, the range of performance, and also some of the thermals involved. Because that's something I need to get better at testing is, how hot does this stuff really get when we use it hard? Can our phones really replace laptops if we're going to be driving them harder? So let's wraps us up for housekeeping. And I'm at 15 minutes. I started at 9:03. It's 9:18. Oh, all of you people have zero faith in me. I love it. All right. Let's get this back up through here. From Matt Tyler, the AirPods Pro don't sound bad, but there are so many options at better prices. LFA Reviews is the man I check out for buds and headphones. If I love talking about audio, but especially in the true wireless space, I credit LFA as being one of the main influences for why I came back. When I started with the first couple generations of true wireless, I walked away. I did not stick with it. I thought they were terrible. I thought they were gimmicks. If it hadn't been for a handful of LFA's reviews, I would not have come back to start reviewing some of these products on my own. So on my channel, you'll see a ton of just different audio gear in general. On his channel, he's got probably one of the best collections of true wireless reviews. So definitely give him a follow and go through his catalog. Again, just because something might be a little bit older doesn't necessarily mean that it's been outperformed yet. And so there's a lot of value to his commentary there. From Solus Geek, imagine when we move to a society like in Her, auditory interactions with assistants, but we're all deaf. Again, it's really obnoxious of me, but I kind of like making that joke at the expense of people who use poor audio products as the, they don't want to hear the criticisms, but maybe they can't hear the criticisms because they've gone deaf, because they listen to their audio on ear pods and AirPods. Maybe that's the problem. Let's see. From Code Exploit. Years of headphone abuse left me with tinnitus. Well, at least I don't need to buy the most audiophile equipments now. There's this, again, and not to pick on you, it's just part of the conversation and why I want to get more aggressive about this. We still don't know what causes tinnitus, but one of the ideas that sort of made sense to me, there's a hypothesis. It's not a theory. It's a hypothesis that tinnitus could be something like a phantom limb syndrome. You know, when someone loses an arm or a leg or a hand and they, when they're not thinking about it, they can feel like that limb is still there. They feel like, oh, my foot is itchy. Oh, I don't have a foot there. There's a hypothesis that tinnitus could be a similar neurological situation like that. Some damage occurred in the ear, and the brain was relying on certain bits of audio information. And when the ear can't deliver that information, the brain kind of makes it up. And that's why we'll hear ringing in our ears or we'll hear tones. There are some extreme forms of tinnitus that start to resemble audio hallucinations. So this is why even when someone starts to notice degradation in the ear, it is even more important that they are spending good money. I mean, it doesn't have to be outlandishly expensive, but protect what hearing you have left. If you have a slight ringing in your ears now, that can be very annoying. It can be very troublesome. There are people that will spend years in therapy to try and deal with the fact that they can't get rid of this tone in their ears. But would you want that to get worse? Would you want that tone to start pulsing? Would you want that tone to start resembling human speech so it sounds like you're hearing people talking? Would you want audio hallucinations to start waking you up at night? It sucks. But from a little bit of hearing damage and tinnitus or tinnitus, it can still get worse to the point. I mean, like, obviously the most extreme would be going completely deaf. But if you go completely deaf through hearing damage, it's very likely that the brain is going to try and fix that for you. You don't want your brain to make up audio because your ears have been so damaged. That's my soapbox. There are 2 months of the year which different medical associations and societies have sort of are sort of making bookending hearing health awareness months, March and October. And for 2020, I am going to have a whole slate of videos primed for both of those months. I'm really going to need help sharing it. Talking about hearing health is one of the least sexy topics in technology, but it's one of the most easily and casually abused parts of our biology. I was plugging my ears. My daughter, one of her friends from school had a birthday at Chuck E. Cheese yesterday, and I had my Pixel with me, which means I didn't have cabled earbuds, and I'd only brought my Bluetooth open ear bone conduction headset. And so, like a dork, I'm walking around Chuck E. Cheese, And it's brutally loud in there. I should have brought headphones for her. I should have brought headphones for my wife. I should have brought earplugs. I should have brought something. And you leave with just the worst audio migraine from constant bombardment of games and kids screaming and music. And it's just a cacophony of terrible audio experiences. But, you know, we're singing Happy Birthday, and I've just kind of got my hands up like this, and I'm trying to be discreet, but everyone's looking at me like I'm the jerk. Like, oh, this guy doesn't want to hear us sing Happy Birthday to our daughter? And you're like, I can't handle this. I make my money. I make my living by being able to edit and listen to stuff. So this is terrible, and I hate it. So that's the gig. We need to do better. And especially as tech fans, tech enthusiasts, we need to be the people that can at least lead part of this discussion. I have videos. I interviewed one of the top audiologists in the country. And not only is there a video on YouTube, we have a half-hour podcast where I'm asking her about different types of hearing solutions, bone conduction, hearing aids, hearing tests, hidden hearing loss. It's good information. And then at the same time, while I would hope people would stop buying AirPods, I can't beat a media and PR machine that has a budget which exceeds the GDP of small nation states. Like, Apple can outspend small countries just for their marketing. But if a friend of yours, a family member of yours, a niece, a nephew, a grandchild, a child, if they're rocking something from Apple, you can help them set things like volume limits. And I guarantee you, they're not going to like it. Every single time I've asked someone to listen in a quiet environment and set a volume limit on earpods, the second they go outside, they instantly disable it because it's just not loud enough. They can't hear their music and there's too much noise to compete. So they start turning the volume up. And that is exactly why I am targeting Apple first with this type of criticism. The most popular company with the biggest advertising budget is the one that I believe we should criticize first, and then we'll work from the top down. We'll go after every other company that copied Apple after we address what Apple's doing. LFA Reviews, it's why I wear earplugs at concerts. It'll sound better. I mean, this sounds so counterintuitive. Concerts will sound better when you put in earplugs and just basic stuff. If you really want to get fancy, I love working with the guys at Me Audio. They're the ones who did the scan of my ears and my wife's ears, and we have custom molded ear tips. Again, it was funny because I criticized the AirPods for having that proprietary ear connector. And I had, again, thanks to Snazzy, I had a bunch of Apple sycophants coming, oh, the replacement ear tips for the AirPods Pro are only like $4. So what are you, like, poor? Are you too poor to buy $4 ear tips? And like, no, dork. My ear tips cost more than most people's headphones. So that's not the problem. The problem is I actually would like to spend more on better ear tips, and Apple won't let me. So those of you who are rocking Comply foam tips, if you have custom molds, if you just use different flanges, like maybe you want one of those really cool Edematic, like umbrella triple flange ear tips, can't use them. You got to use Apple's solution, which doesn't really go into the ear. So it's a lot. but I'll warn you now, this is going to be a fairly regular topic of conversation. So if this isn't your jam, I won't be too upset if you decide to leave and go deaf. That's my dig. From Joshua Luther, live concerts are the worst for me. It's why I rarely go to them anymore. Again, between LFA, who's at Super, Gamesky, we all have a ton of different audio products, from True Wireless to in-ear monitors to headsets and full cans headphones. Got to get over looking like the outsider. I don't always have earplugs on me, but I almost always try to have some type of earbuds. Yesterday, I let myself down, and it reinforced why I will not let that happen again in the future. But who was it? I went to a concert last CES where we were standing right in front of the subs. I can't remember who was performing. Dang it. I was with Trisha, too. She would remember. Trisha's better at this than I am. But yeah, so we got into one of these like insider influencer events and they're like, yeah, we've got this awesome concert. And we were standing right in front of the subs and I'm holding my phone up to shoot just like a little snippet of video that I can share. And when they hit, when they started playing, the force of the subwoofers knocked me back. I almost like flung my phone because the energy coming off of those subs was so brutal. I could not get to my bag fast enough to just pop in. I had my CCA C10s. Was it the C10s? No, it was my AS10s, my KZ AS10s. So those aren't the bestest in terms of audio isolation, but they're $50, five drivers per ear, balanced arms, and I popped those in my head and instantly, like, I could hear what they were playing. If I had left my ears open, it would have been like I would have been muffled and my ears would have immediately platform shift to try and minimize the acoustic pressure of those subwoofers. Like the concert was better and I was able to actually hear the concert because I blocked my ears. So I just would hope I would just hope people start paying attention to this kind of stuff. If you have an Apple Watch, you can do some really cool stuff using your watch as like an SPL meter to see how loud things are. Hand dryers in malls are going to wreck kids' hearing. Traffic sounds are louder than you think they are. This stuff is wearing away at us, and living in modern society, our ears have not evolved to keep up with the challenge there. So even just something, if you can cut 15, 20 dB off of a loud source, it seems like, oh, I'm not going to be able to hear stuff as well. You'll probably be able to hear stuff better. And then you won't leave that concert or that situation with your ears ringing or muffled or, again, it's terrible. So that was a long and rambling explanation of where we're at as a society. But yeah, so there are going to be two hearing health awarenesses month. I'm going to start reaching out to medical professionals and to some of the organizers of these events and see if we can't get more interviews, more topics, things to cover, best practices. And I really want my channel to be a good resource for those kinds of conversations. And I hope it's something that we can start introducing to children at an earlier age. That's the scariest aspect of this. When we look at this trend in hearing loss and how it's spiking, the population it's spiking the most aggressively are in teens and young adults. We're creating generations now into our second generation of deaf consumers. And the hot new trend in wearable technology is going to be hearables. Hearables. So before you really need that full-on hearing aid, you can use some headphones to help you hear in busy environments because you're going deaf and you're 20. Huzzah. From LFA Reviews, the Wu-Tang concert I attended recently was so loud that people were leaving. I actually felt my DNA and fillings vibrating from the bass. That was the first time I ever got a bass hangover from my brain being vibrated like that. Earplugs saved me. That was exactly the experience I had. I can't remember. They have these giant like tiki drums and these huge like synth pads and like When they play, I can't remember who it is. It's going to drive me crazy. But yeah. Yeah. Earplugs, headphones, cans, anything. Protect your ears. Okay. From Code Exploit, there are some fantastic earplugs for concerts that don't filter out quality, just 20 dB of noise. Again, if you, especially if you can get molds done, the folks at Mi Audio will also do filtered. So the earplug goes into your ear, and then there's literally a hole in the earplug that you screw in this little filter, and you can customize and tune what it is that you're trying to attenuate. So you can make an earplug that's more appropriate for like construction jobs, or you can make an earplug that's going to deliver sound quality, like you're saying, it delivers the sound quality, but it just reduces the intensity of the sound hitting the ear. It's like the science on this stuff is fascinating and it's amazing. And I feel like most people have given up and just gone, well, I got a pair of earbuds in the box with my phone and they're pretty good. And then that was the end. That was the end of their audio education. Matt Tyler, if something is too loud with earplugs in, it's time to leave. All right, we got to get to some news. I like I mentioned at the top of this podcast, I had to completely reformat and shift the topics that we're going to be discussing today. All of the links to the articles we're going to be discussing will be on the show notes, somegadgetguy.com, after the audio version goes live. I'm going to try and share links in the chat today. Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. Before we get into like Thanksgiving stuff, this is like my week of airing grievances. This is going to be quite a few of these topics are going to be a little frustrating. And the wrap up of our show is all about YouTube. And we talked about some YouTube shenanigans with Markiplier last week. There are some other concerning aspects of creating content online, but there was an FCC story this week. And if there's an FCC story, I've got to talk about it, because for as much as people don't like to discuss tech and politics, tech is politics. Technology is how we live our lives and how we accomplish things and how we'll be controlled interact with governments and with corporations. So we talked about this. I think this was back in August. The FCC tried to set up rules that would kill local communities' abilities to assign fees on things like polls. So this is a story coming by way of Ars Technica. Again, if it's the FCC, we're going to use the word again a lot. But FCC sued by dozens of cities after voting to kill local fees and rules. Cities challenge FCC vote to preempt local fees and broadband regulations. From the article written up by John Brodkin, the Federal Communications Commission faces a legal battle against dozens of cities from across the United States, which sued the FCC to stop an order that preempts local fees and regulation of cable broadband networks. The cities filed lawsuit in response to the FCC's August 1st vote that limits the fees municipalities can charge cable companies and prohibits cities and towns from regulating broadband services offered over cable networks. We are well into regulatory capture. I think it's pretty clear Ajit Pai is not working as a regulatory agency for the citizens of the United States, but is instead working to increase the reach, the power, and the profitability of ISPs and mega corporations working in the tech sector. So to grossly oversimplify, we talked about it more in August. I don't expect you to go back to my August podcasts to try and find it. The FCC has abdicated its role in regulating internet companies, broadband companies. But they're trying to claim that there should be a federal standard of no regulation. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, Ajit Pai casually discussing how federalism and those pesky states' rights are the big problem for telecoms. That we can't have states' rights because a state might write their own rules in how they want to do business with ISPs. So we should probably get rid of states' rights, which, coming from a conservative, is more than a little bit frustrating and hypocritical. But again, I kind of feel like we're watching a lot of hoop jumping to validate wealth extraction tactics in the most insidious way possible. So the FCC making this claim that they can't regulate ISPs, but also no one else should be able to also. And we're going to codify regulations against citizens, not against ISPs. So what they tried to do is they tried to write a rule saying a small town, a city, even a state can't write their own rules for how ISPs interact with the local ecosystem, the local network. Again, telephone poles where all of these cables are strung, in some states that's private company territory, and in some states that's public. You know, almost all of this was funded by taxpayer dollars. But in some states, they gave up their rights to pole access or to digging trenches, and that's the purview of the ISP. In more than a dozen states, they still maintain the public infrastructure that these companies do business on, and the FCC is saying, oh, but you can't set rates. ISPs should be allowed to use that for whatever they want to pay. So now we have to sue the FCC to stop regulating against states' rights. That's the dystopian future we live in right now. from Ruru 2, Ajit Pai will do whatever the big ISPs wants. He will have a $20 million payout once he leaves office. This is how our system of bribes works now. LFA reviews. Those pesky laws always getting in the way. And Evil Duder 1, your politicians sold you out. Ruru 2 is correct is factually correct in correcting Evil Duder. Ajit Pai was appointed. He wasn't someone we voted on, but we did vote on the administration. And this is why not all sides are the same. When we had Tom Wheeler at the head of the FCC, we thought he was going to be a telecom shill. And instead, we got a pretty decent start with low-level reactionary regulations in the form of the Open Internet Order. And we had 1 year of almost having net neutrality protections built into the FCC. And then we voted in Trump, and all of that was destroyed in under a year. So again, both sides aren't the same here. This isn't all politicians suck. This is a most politicians suck, but depending on what suck you fancy, that came out terribly wrong. some bad policy will be implemented in your name if you value things like actual fair competition and broadband protections and network neutrality, broadband deployment, and companies throttling your data, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not a good look. From Matt Tyler, we vote for things and have to trust these people to count correctly and actually appoint the winners and so on. From Zalbotnik, the stance of both parties around stuff like net neutrality was made very clear beforehand. I feel like it's been pretty clear. We have guys like Ajit Pai at the head of the FCC sort of clouding the waters. Again, he's using terminology half-heartedly and incorrectly to make this topic as confusing as possible. And that is a very sad state of affairs. especially for how we're going to be working against mega data corporations and mega infrastructure corporations moving on into the future. DTNL. Hashtag some double entendre guy. That was unintentional. And it is maybe one of the worst things I've ever said on this podcast. But moving right along, I do have one more story from Ars Technica here, because if we don't start enacting some kind of regulatory or corrective action against some of these really, really large data companies, I feel like our ability to differentiate truth from propaganda is going to become just logarithmically more difficult moving into the next year or three. This is another story by way of Ars Technica. Let me throw it into the live chat here. And written up by Beth Moll. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the single leading source of anti-vax ads on Facebook. Facebook has no incentive to clear information. Someone will give Facebook money, and then Facebook will disseminate their message. From the article written up by Ms. Moll, just two organizations were responsible for the majority of anti-vaccine advertisements on Facebook before the social media giant restricted such content in March of this year, according to a November 13th study in the journal Vaccine. Of 145 anti-vaccine Facebook advertisements that ran between May 31st and February 22nd. Oh, May 31st of 2017 and February 22nd of 2019, the World Mercury Project and a group called Stop Mandatory Vaccination together ran 54% of them. The World Mercury Project, which ran the most ads of any single source, is an organization closely aligned with the anti-vaccine group Children's Health Defense. Both are spearheaded by Robert F. Kennedy. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., an environmental lawyer turned prolific peddler of dangerous anti-vaccine misinformation. He and his organization promote conspiracy theories about vaccine safety, including the roundly debunked claim that safe, life-saving immunizations are linked to autism. More recently, Kennedy has become a prominent opponent of laws aimed at increasing vaccine rates among school children. We recently saw the impact on Bitcoin. Sorry, this is a very brief tangent. I'm going to get back to this story. We recently saw the economic impact of Bitcoin. There was a deep investigation, and the FTC and the IRS are getting involved in an investigation of the market on how Bitcoin transactions were valued with American currency and traded for real world monies. And it found a very hard link between one organization led by a couple people that was mostly responsible for that spike of Bitcoin when Bitcoin was trading at around $20,000 per Bitcoin. It took two or three people working through one outlet on one currency trading website to, I think they created almost $200 billion worth of value for Bitcoin, and then the whole thing burst and the price plummeted. And a lot of regular people seeing that increase in value got burned. Again, like the housing market, like Enron, like WorldCom, all of these mega investing opportunities that then completely implode on people are built on a very, very small number of people manipulating the system for their own personal enrichment. Now, I don't know what Kennedy has to benefit from weaponizing misinformation on vaccines. That's still, I don't feel anyone's made the claim or has posited why he is working so aggressively, raising so much money and flooding social media with terrible information. I don't know what the end game is. He wants kids to die from polio. I don't understand what it is that he's trying to accomplish. But he fronts two organizations that do this type of charitable outreach. spreading bad information on vaccines, and his organization was responsible for 54% of the traffic on Facebook, the ad traffic on Facebook spreading bad information. Again, when we see Facebook pull some of this kind of content, but then they won't filter lies in political ads, and then Twitter messes up their own stance on whether or not they'll even accept money for political ads, but they'll accept money from political organizations for ads that aren't directly related to a campaign. This is why a Facebook, a Google, an Amazon, a Twitter can't keep having it both ways with the way that we used to use our TV network laws. That a broadcaster shouldn't be held responsible for some of the content of a broadcast. If they have editorial control over their platform, then they can be held responsible for the content of an article or a broadcast. But Facebook is hiding behind that rule, saying, oh, but we don't control what gets posted to Facebook, so we can't be held responsible for bad content on Facebook. But if our advertisers are upset about content on Facebook, we'll totally pull that content. So we do have editorial control, but we have no control. But we do have control if it hurts our pocketbook, but we don't have control if we're testifying before Congress. And this is exactly what's going to wreck online interactions. If the industry can't be self-policing, then politicians get involved. And when politicians get involved, the rules will be bad. No one will like the rules that politicians come up with. And this is why Facebook is going to dig its own grave. This is why Facebook is going to burn down the bridge while we're all standing on it. I don't know what other metaphor I want to mix there. Oh, we've got a nice little back and forth going on in the comments about broadband and infrastructure. And Matt Tyler and I disagree. We're good buddies. He has my LG V50, so I'm going to be very measured in how I comment on how I'm going to reply to his comment here. Matt Tyler, have you seen UK politics news about Labour? If they win the election, they say free broadband for all. And we've got a couple back and forths about why that might be or might not be economically feasible. I believe that there should be a low-level baseline connectivity for everybody. Almost the entire infrastructure for broadband was built on public lands with public funds. And I would imagine that the UK's distribution of that is very similar. A private corporation comes into what has already been established through the government and the military and then monetizes the traffic to connect consumers to an infrastructure that was originally built on public funds. And every year, they lobby even more that they need more tax dollars and more zoning and more sweetheart deals to improve their networks. But then we almost never see network improvements. We only see those companies make more money. And now, especially here in the United States, thanks to the FCC, we've seen an increase in unlimited plans that are not unlimited. We've seen an increase in home broadband being throttled or capped. And we haven't seen any of this proliferation. Oh, and we've seen a return to additional fees. So as long as they disclose the fee per FTC guidelines, they can just randomly tack on additional fees. Last week, we talked about AT&T just jacking up rates because they could. Nothing got better. I mean, you got more data in your data bucket, but nothing got better with connectivity. Nothing got better with speeds, with deployment, with towers. All of that is still the same. But AT&T can charge you more because they can. I disagree with that as a general business practice. If a company wants to come in and roll their own servers and roll their own fiber and roll their own telephone poles and connect consumers by free market, not by lobbying politicians and getting sweetheart deals and getting tax breaks and getting public funds to roll all that out, great. Government should stay out of the way. But that's not how all of this stuff was built. We paid for it all. We keep paying for it. And we keep getting charged more to use what we paid for. That's the reality of the telecommunications industry as far as I see it. So it's not a simple one-to-one. Oh, companies are going to have a... If a company wants to compete, then they need to offer a better product than what we paid for with our tax dollars. And none of them seem to be able to do that. If I go to Chattanooga, Tennessee, I could spend half as much on my internet bill and get a download speed 3 times faster than what I currently have, and an upload speed almost 20 times faster, if I'm doing the math right, than what I currently have. And that was paid for by the people of Chattanooga. They got a grant from the Department of Energy to roll out fiber to their community, and it worked phenomenally well. That's what public infrastructure would look like, less overhead, paid for directly by the community, invested directly back into the community, and now they are at the leading edge of not only data, but also of power grid management. Again, the United States electrical grid is in bad shape, and one of the things that would help fix it is fiber to home across the United States. But AT&T is not going to get that done. Verizon's not going to get that done. Comcast, Spectrum, none of those companies are going to get that done. We'll need to do it ourselves. So that's my feeling on the situation. It's nice and it's fun and it's pithy to say, oh, politicians can't do anything right, except for all the times that they do things right. You know, like, again, politics isn't one thing. The government isn't one dude sitting in a throne with ultimate power over everything that goes on. It's a huge network of different little agencies and different little pockets of power. And corporations are not answerable to the people, but these little institutions that we've created are answerable to the electorate. And we've seen that immediately. We had Obama in office. We had Tom Wheeler at the head of the FCC. We got net neutrality. We elected Trump. We got Ajit Pai. And now everything is worse. I cannot come up with a better example of how not all politicians are the same. And so like Mark Northgraves, we've got, you know, bring on the Google Wi-Fi balloons. Yeah, I mean, like, if I had access to Google Fiber, I would do business with Google in a heartbeat. But wireless is not going to get this job done. Again, it's not just, can I get a slightly faster download speed for my Netflixes? It's, can we also utilize this to fix the systemic problems with how all of our gadgets, electronics, the future of electronic automobiles, we're going to be talking about an e-Mustang. In a crisis, if you had fiber, you could devise a smart power management system that could draw power from an electric vehicle if the local grid goes out. Look at all the power outages that we're having in San Francisco, thanks to the energy company that we have here, which is mostly a private entity. So wouldn't it be nice if you had a plug-in hybrid or an EV and, you know, they cut power and you're without power for days during some of these rolling blackouts? If you could leech off of your vehicle. I have a fridge full of medications that needs to stay cool. I've got crazy dumb backup batteries to help sustain that. But if I had an EV and I had fiber and I had a smart home management system, IoT wouldn't just be nifty things that I can connect to a smart speaker. It would literally be a smart home with smart appliances that got me better rates on electricity, that got me better power management with large storage batteries. I would be safe from some of that activity. And same thing, if you're in an area that has lots of floods, if you're in an area that has tornadoes, if you're in an area that has any kind of natural calamity, we could devise smarter systems to back that up, but it's not going to come from private corporations because they won't roll out that infrastructure for you. You're not profitable enough. They don't care about you until you show that you can give your money to someone else. And then they suddenly care. Then they get very interested in trying to compete. But that's going to be another conversation. So we'll go from there. And Ruru too. All of the landline ISPs will fight to stop Google Wi-Fi balloons, but I think a lot of them are just going to look at trying to license 5G. We keep pretending like 5G is going to solve any of these problems, and so far all I've seen is 5G is a faster router, but we have the same infrastructure. No fiber is getting lit up. We're not getting any faster speeds. We're just making the towers a little bit better. And then we're saying, oh, but 5G is also going to be for IoT or home automation. Are you going to connect a dozen products in your home to a 5G connection? What does it cost you to put an LTE watch on your plan every month? And then we're gonna call up AT&T, we're gonna call up Verizon and say, I've got 5 smart cameras, I've got a home emergency system, I've got a bunch of smart lights. Let's all put those on the 5G too. That's a terrible idea. And then for every tower that is able to handle more products, we're just going to dump a bunch of useless home automation products on it. Boeing Byte has entered the chat. What's up, Boeing Byte? And data caps through the roof. Data caps, throttling, all that good stuff would be less of a concern if we had fiber as a good competitor to... Again, that all spurned off of how frustrating Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is being. I don't know how we got here. We made it. We can move on. Mark Northgraves, your cell phone bill will be $1,400 a month. Would you like insurance? And Matt Tyler saying data caps don't exist anymore. Well, yeah, they do. They absolutely do. So moving right along, Gary the Fireman, but 5GE is so great. Oh, lies, marketing and lies. So I want to talk about something that got a lot of people up in arms, and I'm not seeing why this was such the doom and gloom story that people were making it out to be. So this is coming by way of NPR, Google Health Data Project Under Scrutiny. Here, let me pull up the live chat here. So this is actually just a 3-minute audio snippet of the NPR broadcast from November 14th, hosted by Shannon Bond. But they did write it up if you want to read just the transcript of what they're talking about. Essentially, Google is contracting with... what's the name of the company? Ascension. It's a Catholic healthcare system. And they operate, I believe they operate in around 20 states. But Google's partnering with Ascension to work on Ascension's data infrastructure. Ascension has a network of hospitals and doctors. And their current solution, there is almost no communication for patient information between some of these separate institutions that are all under their umbrella. So they contracted Google to... I said contracting Google, and 3 phones just lit up with Google Assistant. They reached out to Alphabet to use Google to start tying together some of that information. Google has to live up to their data privacy claims, but according to this relationship, Google is not getting access to any of the health information. They're just setting up the infrastructure for Ascension to be able to use it. And it's on Ascension to devise the HIPAA-compliant patient privacy protocols and the encryption protocols for their network. It's just going to be fulfilled by Google data centers and Google servers and Google cloud storage. And in our current state of services and infrastructure, that sounds right to me. A fat produce from Andrew. Google already has all of my health information, so they can just be disappointed in me like most other health apps are. But again, getting back to this story, where else would a medical institution turn to today? I mean, like, you've got Google, so you could use Google data servers. I tried to put Google and data server into the same word and almost said doodle. You've got Microsoft, and you've got Amazon. I don't know that there are any other companies with as robust a corporate infrastructure to manage health data. So now Google actually does need to live up to that responsibility, and we need to see transparency, and we need to see good reporting that information that goes through Google data centers is actually being encrypted, is being maintained properly, is being kept private. But I don't know what else you could do. We do not have a public infrastructure for mass quantities of data. Unless you're the NSA. Boeing Byte mentions Oracle. Oracle could be one. IBM, that could be another corporate solutions company for managing that type of data, especially in the quantities of data that a company like that, an institution like that would need to manage. But again, so now we've hit five. There are five companies on the planet. And I don't understand the immediate knee-jerk sky is falling reaction. Google has had kind of a shaky past with privacy situations and search engine manipulation. But if they're able to live up to those obligations of not snooping in on the data that they're managing, and I think we've seen Google working with other corporations to reasonable effect, a responsible effect in managing corporate solutions, I'm not overly concerned in the short term that this is a bad idea. That in the short term, this could deliver the blueprint. It could be the backbone of how other insurance companies, medical institutions, networks can work together to make sure patient information is accessible to the right people, to the patient and to their doctors. From Code Exploit, well, instead, we could just give it to Facebook. What could go wrong? So for me, this is a wait and see situation, not a doom and gloom situation. I'm not afeared of Google supplying the infrastructure. I would be very concerned if, like, Google's mission here was to use that data in their own products at the expense of patients, but we'll see how that goes. Now, in things that Facebook does poorly, let me take a drink of water here. Matt Tyler, we could just use Matt's tech solutions. Just give me all your data and I'll keep it safe, I promise. Boeing Byte, it could be good to case study countries with socialized medicine. I'm hoping that over our next presidential election, we'll figure out something in that regard, because our current system is broken and no one elected right now seems capable of fixing it. But in other terrible Facebook news, Facebook has been snooping in on your iPhone cameras. They totally didn't mean to. It just sort of happened, like it does with Facebook. So this was, I found this first from Solution Factory. Facebook on iPhone has been sneakily using the camera, and as expected, Facebook says sorry. So it turns out Facebook has been sneaking using your phone's camera while you were using the app, at least if you're on an iPhone, that is. Facebook users took to Twitter saying that their phone cameras were activated automatically whenever they were using the Facebook app. After a lot of outrage over this latest privacy bungle, Facebook has acknowledged the bug, saying that it is submitting a fix for the same to Apple Store. The fix should be available on the Apple Store sometime today. And this article was posted yesterday. November 13th. So, you know, yet another little bungle. If you're still using a Facebook app on your phone at this point, I don't know what else to tell you. you can sit there and campaign and make videos, and man, iOS is more secure than Android, but iOS is only secure as what you use on it. So if you use Siri, all of your information that you go through Siri and search is going to go to Google. And if you have the Facebook app on your phone, then anything that interacts with the Facebook app is all going to go to Facebook. Your iPhone isn't more secure unless you use it in a vacuum of services and you never install any apps on it. So, yeah, that's a bad look. From Fat Produce, Facebook can seriously die in a fire. Matt Tyler, but why? Because Facebook. And Fat Produce, I'm calling on that being in a bug and not being intentional. Mark Northgraves, Facebook bugs are like Bethesda bugs. It's a new feature. it's so great. I do want to say one okay thing that they're catching up on. This is a story by way of Engadget, written up by John Fingers. Let me put that into the live chat. So Facebook is a leaky sieve. Again, if you're using any, any Facebook products, at this point, we should just expect the worst and then be pleasantly surprised when not the worst happens. Instagram cracks down on an app that snoops on private profiles. So there's an app called Ghosty that that can apparently, what you do is you give Ghosty your information, and then Ghosty will let you open up the profile of a private Instagram account. So I'm not reading this article verbatim here. It's pretty short. I put the link in. You can chew through it really quickly. There have been 500,000 downloads of this app of Ghosty, and the immediate reaction from Instagram is to pressure Google to pull the app. So that's good. They at least acknowledged that there was some type of exploit or some type of hole in their privacy system from Instagram. Who would have thought? But again, their main reaction is focused more on trying to hide the app from people, which on Android, you could sideload Ghosty. If you can get the APK, you could still use this service. Instagram was clear that Ghosty violates our terms and planned further enforcement against the developer on top of the cease and desist warning. So that's great. The thing I haven't heard is, has Instagram detailed and planned to patch what Ghosty is doing to allow access to private profiles? There hasn't been any confirmation there that I've been able to find. That seems like the bigger problem is fix the hole, unless the hole is built on some kind of product that that Instagram doesn't want to manage or manipulate, in which case, like people were joking, like Mark Northgraves was saying, it's not a bug, it's the feature. The feature is all of your data leaks to whoever we want to give it to. Oh no, someone is using that for their own benefit? Oh dang, we're going to send them a sternly worded letter. Wow, it's so bad. Okay, one quick little bit of news. I can't think of any CEO in the telecom space who is more public currently than Jean Legere, but he has just tweeted he will be stepping down as CEO of T-Mobile on May 1st, handing over the reins to Mike Sievert. He's going to remain on the T-Mobile board of directors. So I doubt he's just going to disappear from all of the shenanigans of what's going on. He's, I mean, again, he's a colorful and expressive individual who was very publicly, was one of the public data points for helping T-Mobile build their subscriber base and kind of graft this reputation of being kind of a counterpoint to the AT&T's and Verizon's. And it's interesting, like, to have like any kind of an emotional attachment to a mega multi-billion dollar corporation. But Jean Legere was fun to cover. Like, he was fun to write about. The T-Mobile Uncarrier events were disruptive and they felt like dangerous and interesting and fun. So I hope this isn't sort of the first step towards a T-Mobile Sprint merger making one mega entity that's just boring like AT&T. Like, I hope T-Mobile is able to maintain some of the corporate culture which made them interesting and fun to cover. I don't have high hopes on that, but that's what I'm hoping. Is I'm hoping we'll see a company that's now going to be super huge still able to make nimble adjustments and react to the market and do interesting things and not just become another Verizon clone because they can, because they're big. From Fat Produce, with Jean Legere in charge, with Jean Legere leaving, they better not put the Sprint CEO in charge since he basically ran that company into the ground. From Tech Love and Mama, apparently I think talking about Instagram, good thing I'm not very interesting. They would not want my info. I mean, I almost want to say, put a bounty on Tech Love and Mama and who shall bring me her Instagram information first? Matt Tyler, I don't know. I think Mark Zuckerberg is interesting to talk about. But Jean Legere was interesting in a good way, in a fun way, not in a I hate the future of technology kind of way. Mark Zuckerberg makes me want to, like, burn and salt the earth whenever something comes up about his business practices. Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon and my Audible campaign, I can hook you up with a $20 voucher if you're shopping a new OnePlus, or you can grab a ton of great video games for cheap with Humble Bundle Monthly. I also have a teaser image on that page for my upcoming Mega Pickle coffee mug, which will hopefully be available for purchase soon. SomeGadgetGuy.com, link at the top of the site, support Some Gadget Guy, and hopefully you find something cool, something you might like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. So again, Mike Sievert. Let's see if we can look up Mike Sievert. Let's see who he is. Proud Pacific Northwest resident, maritime and aviation enthusiast, husband and dad, loves a great cup of coffee, or several, president and COO at T-Mobile. So basically, T-Mobile, the heads of T-Mobile are just like shifting. Jean Legere is going to become a board of director member, and Mike Sievert is going to move from COO, chief operations officer, and move into CEO, chief executive officer. So Andrew, you're okay. Take a breath. It's all right. That nasty, mean Sprint CEO will not be at the head of T-Mobile. It's okay. And then I pat you on the head and I give you a lollipop and I tell you to go play, but come back at sunset. And make sure you tell me if you're going to go to a friend's house. Okay. Matt Tyler, he loves a cup of coffee out of a Mega Pickle mug, because Mega Pickle mugs are the most delicious pickle-themed mugs that you can drink your beverages out of. Mm-hmm. Ruru 2. He's going to be the next director of the FCC. I mean, again, he's a colorful character and would be an interesting person to discuss if he were to become the head of the telecom regulatory agency that isn't doing its job. Gary the Fireman Sievert seemed like a marketing guy, but he's very involved in their quarterly calls. So that should be interesting. Again, a marketing guy could be fun, could continue on in the spirit of what made T-Mobile interesting to talk about. So before we get to the Reddit plug, again, our podcast is running long like it always is. The good bit of news. I have been phenomenally surprised that the rise of popularity of vehicles like the Tesla, excuse me, and all of the various plug-in hybrids and some of the other EVs that have been coming out. We had a bunch of like Nissan Leaf Challengers there for a while. Fiat made a really cute little EV. But again, I feel like Tesla is one of the primary, most visible driving forces in getting consumers to adopt electric vehicles. I'm actually very surprised it's taken other traditional automakers this long to challenge, to come up with competing vehicles that can try and give Tesla a run for their money. You would think with so much building expertise and so many subsidiary companies that are also making cars that GM, Ford would be able to iterate more quickly on desirable electric vehicles. I honestly did not expect Ford to be getting into this market anytime soon. I talked about this, I think, like years ago in a podcast. I don't even know if it was on my podcast, that Ford was going to be abandoning cars, that they were going to be cutting almost all of the cars from their lineups to focus on crossover utility vehicles, sport utility vehicles, trucks, and that the only label, the only car that was going to remain a part of their long-term lineup was going to be the Mustang. So I was very pleasantly surprised to see a Mustang-labeled product as an EV. This is written up by Matthew DeBord on Business Insider. Ford just revealed its Mustang Mach-E SUV, the first new Mustang-branded vehicle since 1964, and a Tesla Challenger. And so, yes, this is more of a, what is it, the Model Y competitor? But it's not a big, bulky truck of an SUV. It does look like a lifted and raised Mustang. So this is, again, and this is the first new vehicle to sport the Mustang badge. Deposit starts at $500. Pricing is starting at around the $44,000 tier. And there's going to be a higher performance version at $60,000. And the GT trim in 2021 is expected to hit 0 to 60 in 4 seconds. The GT performance is going to be mid 3 seconds. We're looking at 460 ponies on an electric motor. This is an interesting development in electric vehicles. And I'm just scrolling through their sort of the Business Insider post right now, showing off some of the press photos. And again, I like that it looks like a lifted, raised Mustang and not a big, fat, heavy, slow truck. But this is the development that I would really hoped we would have seen back, like when the Model S came out, when Tesla put out a premium sedan. I thought, okay, well, we'll see like a bunch of other companies coming out, you know, like a Cadillac or a Mercedes and a BMW, and we're going to see some really cool EV competition. And we've seen some, but not as much as I was expecting. And this is one of those tipping points where I think EVs over the next couple of years are actually going to be the safer long-term vehicle purchases. That, like, let's say in 2022, you buy a gas-powered vehicle and you live in a more urban area, Your resale values are going to plummet faster. The infrastructure is going to start shifting towards more charging and better battery technologies. We're already starting to see some of that toehold and investment pay off for EVs today. And that the coolness factor of younger consumers picking up cars, because car sales that are an all-time low, that's going to be a driving motivator in terms of newer consumers entering this market, looking at internal combustion and looking at electric vehicles. I think they're going to be leaning more towards those EVs. So this is a step in the right direction. I hope Ford makes something compelling. I hope Ford is really bringing something to compete, because at any time a traditional auto manufacturer steps into this arena with a half-hearted attempt, like what was it GM with their terrible little egg car? Was it the Bolt? Because the Volt was kind of cool, but the Bolt, I think, was terrible. Someone correct me in the chat if I have those names mixed up. But, you know, they limp into the market. The car is just the grossest little consumer, you know, fleet vehicle style plastic trim garbage car. And of course, it has to cost significantly more than your standard subcompact egg car. So then they go, oh, see, consumers don't want to buy EVs. We've made one and no one bought it. And you're like, you made the worst possible version of an EV. That was the problem. If you make a premium crossover vehicle with all-wheel drive, 0 to 60 times in the 4.5-second range, it's got that Mustang pony on the front of the car, that could be more exciting. That could be kind of cool. And that it's not a $100,000 car just for putting fancy labels on it and some good performance. EVs are going to show us, like, you can go real fast and not spend as much. Hopefully, we'll see some really cool stuff there. The standard range Mustang Mach-E is estimated to charge from 10% to 80% in approximately 38 minutes while charging on a DC fast charging station. So again, we're just going to have to see, can Ford, can GM, can Tesla build out an infrastructure and also like home chargers that can really utilize and take advantage of some of that kit. Whenever we road trip, we'll drive through Barstow and there's a Tesla supercharger station there now. It becomes a very desirable place to stop, top off your car while you go and grab a burger, come back. You know, your car's been plugged in for a half hour and you're ready to go driving again. Like that could be the future of cross-country travel. You have to get out of the car, take a break, stretch your legs. It's going to take you at least 20 minutes, maybe 40 minutes to get through all of that. And then your car is at 90% charge again. До свидания. You know, like that could be kind of cool. Let's see. From Zalbotnik. It's not surprising at all that traditional manufacturers took so long. Tesla made many mistakes, had quality issues, and ran red numbers to the extent that shareholders of the traditional companies would never allow. And that's another good point, is even for all of their manufacturing acumen, you got to keep the shareholders happy. And if you can't show cancerous growth of profits, then the shareholders get very upset, and that's going to hold back innovation. So you need a disruptor who's willing to lose money in the market for a couple, many years. And now everyone seems to think it's a viable business strategy when it could have been from the onset. It could have been in the late 90s. But no, because money. God, I don't like sounding like some filthy communist. DTNL, why does that car look like an Audi? Abraham Artemis, I don't really mind the EV part, but making it an SUV in Terrobang? From New Master X, I'm not going to jump and cover this. I've got way too much. This podcast is already way too long. But hot news, breaking news, reviewers dropped their Google Stadia videos. So your YouTube is probably being assaulted by Google Stadia videos. We'll have plenty to talk about YouTube after the Reddit break, but I'm not... I'll save my comments on Stadia for a future conversation. Fat produce. For EVs to be feasible in rural America, I feel we are going to need more range per charge still. I think that's a totally fair assessment. But I think one of the things that's going to help offset that is the number of consumer vehicles that only still get about, what, 300 miles to a tank of gas, 400 miles to a tank of gas. And we're closing in pretty good. I mean, for a Model 3 to be in the mid-200s, we're getting in on what a rural person might require for longer commutes back and forth from work. There's this notion of like, oh, I fancy the open road and I just want to jump in my car at any time and go road tripping. And that's still, obviously, we're going to have to fight that. But the adoption of faster battery charging technologies in combination with batteries that can start hitting that $300 to $400 mile range, we're going to reach parity with gas pretty soon. I mean, not next year, but relatively soon, considering the automobile has been around for over 100 years. So then it's just getting the education out there, making sure consumers are aware of those different products and kind of overcoming this weird desire to stop innovation because I like my horsepower, high displacement V8s, which is dumb because EVs are faster.
I like that rumble of my V8. It's got a CUDA. It's got a Hemi.
Cool. And it's still going to get smoked by a sedan. And yeah, I mean, so Paco's been talking, it would be nice if we could get those carbon batteries. But really, even just some of the normal, because every year batteries get better. It's just that we put more demands on them when they get better. So even just the normal improvements to automobile tech, we're going to see some solid improvements over the next 2 or 3 years, regardless. And even then, if you bought an EV today and, oh, you only had a 200 mile range, most consumers are good with that. You know, I think the average commute is somewhere around 30 miles. Yeah, 200 miles is a couple days of that. Fat produce. The issue, though, is charging time for rural users. So you drive to your job and you plug in your car and this Mustang can charge 70% of its battery in 40 minutes. So that sounds more like a business perk could be more EV charging stations, not, oh, it takes so long and I can just fill up. But did that make your day better? So your car was sitting at your job all day doing nothing. So you had to drive to work and then you get back in your car and then you have to take more time out of your day to drive to a gas station and fill up your tank. And it doesn't take a long time, but that's still time spent driving out of your way. Time spent at the pump. Maybe you get out and you grab a soda from the convenience store and you come back. That time still counts. But if your car was able to trickle charge at your job, then zero time will have been spent on managing your EV. Your day just got one trip to the gas pump shorter for your rural commute if you had an EV with at least a 300 mile range. That to me sounds better, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe more inconveniences for vehicles that pollute the air are really the way that Americans like to waste their time. I could be wrong. So let me get this out of the way here. From Abraham Artemis, I do like EV, but I can't deny to say this one. Electric powered vehicles sound really boring. I don't care how a vehicle sounds. I want a vehicle that can pin me in the back of my seat. Right now, my mom drives a car that gets shockingly fast. I don't care that it's quiet. In fact, it's kind of nice that it's quiet. The rumble of an engine means inefficiency, wasted power, wasted heat, and air pollution. Go faster, go slower. So again, you can have a neat sounding rumbly car. I'll play an audio file of a rumbly V8 and then pin the throttle on a Tesla and go whoosh. And I'll wave to you as I pass you. So that's where I want to go. That's what I want. I don't care about displacement. I want fast. and EVs. I was, again, I did this video years ago. I was tooling around in my buddy's Nissan Leaf. It's a second generation Nissan Leaf. Not a good EV. I mean, a very early entrant into the world of EVs. And what I couldn't capture on camera is there's this Mustang that kept rolling up on us at stoplights, and he just popped the throttle down, and right off the line, we were beating this Mustang every single time. The Mustang would easily catch up and pass us, but off the line acceleration, a Nissan Leaf was taking down this Mustang. I want that. I don't care if my car goes rumbly-doo. That to me is now the old sound of inefficiency and slowness. How many times you're like, oh, there's this like really awesome like Camaro and it's making a ton of noise and it's only going a bit faster than I am in my Nissan Sentra, but it's making a lot of noise to outperform me a little bit on California roads. We can do better than that. And from Noobmaster, most cars are going to have fake engine noises anyway. This is like the growing trend. Like they even on internal combustion engine vehicles, they'll add sound to the vehicle. It's so dumb. Matt Tyler, road crossing safety. Look, listen, look again. The future is look, listen, look again and wonder why you didn't hear the car coming as it hits you. So part of the problem is you're going to have a harder time hearing EVs because you're surrounded by internal combustion engines. An EV, any vehicle driving, makes a lot of noise. Tire noise, handling noise, air displacement noise. But you can't hear it as well because you're surrounded by inefficient engines that were developed over a century ago and have gotten better, but still pollute the air, still waste a ton of energy in heat, and require a lot of extra maintenance that an EV doesn't need. If you weren't surrounded by internal combustion engines, you'd hear EVs a lot better. The whine of a motor is very easy to place in your surroundings. So why don't we make this better for everybody, better for air, better for power, better for long-term finances, and start investing in that infrastructure instead of just doing what's sort of convenient in the moment now, even though it's worse for everybody. Yeah, Zal Botnick, Nissan deserves credit for selling a relatively cheap EV so early on. It's a shame that we got hit in that catastrophic housing market in 2007, 2008, because Nissan actually had some grand designs on making, like, I forget exactly what the numbers were, but they came out with a Leaf and then they were saying they wanted 70% of their fleet to be electric vehicles by 2015. And then that entire plan was thrown out the window after the housing market crash. And they're starting to get back into investing again into EVs. And Hyundai is doing that too. There are now two models of Hyundai that are pretty decent little city commuter EVs, the Ioniq and the Kona. We're seeing Audi have to play ball because of all of the shenanigans they pulled with turbo diesel cars and polluting the environment and, you know, putting political pressure on people from disclosing that they were lying about their vehicle efficiency. So that's progress, but it's slow. I'm hoping that, again, by having a couple aspirational products, a super expensive Tesla Roadster, a fairly expensive Mustang electric SUV, this is what kind of starts getting consumers more interested in looking at some of their options. Because I think people are still thinking about EVs like plug-in hybrids. Like, oh, I can go 30 miles and then I need to plug in and it's going to take 6 hours to charge. Which isn't how EVs work. That's not what's going on today. From Boeing Byte, what about that fart noisemaker for the slow-moving Teslas? Yeah. My mom had a lot of fun playing with the fart mode on her Tesla. A good fart joke is accessible to all. And from DKRY on Mixer, government is requiring EVs to make noise at low speeds. I mean, we covered this too. I mean, internal combustion engines make extra noise that they don't need to make. and EVs now all have some kind of speaker tech. But once we got to a point where a majority of vehicles were not using combustion engines, you'd be able to hear an electric motor just fine. And then from Ruru 2, are there enough batteries for the new Tesla trucks? And that's going to be a whole other infrastructure conversation, because we definitely need to be refining our battery tech. But until there's a market for more batteries, there's no incentive to refine the battery tech. So it's chicken and the egg. At least Tesla is starting to push in one direction. So other companies will have to catch up, and we'll have to see what is it that we can do about battery manufacturing to make it more local, to make it less dependent on shipping, to offset carbon footprints. And then also all of the scary political issues surrounding rare earth elements. Where do we get these materials from? Are they sourced responsibly? Are we destroying the environment to make a more environmentally friendly vehicle? But we can't fix those problems until we actually commit to fixing the problems of internal combustion and how terrible the oil economy is for everybody. Getting off the oil and the petrol dollar would probably help move us along a lot faster. So that's as good a place as any to stop and take a break and talk about some Reddits. Okay, real quick. Gary the Fireman. Carroll Shelby has to be rolling over in his grave for misuse of the Mustang name. If Carroll Shelby were to sit his butt down in a Mustang-badged vehicle that did 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds and had a lush interior, comfy seats, air conditioning and multimedia controls, I don't think he'd have a huge problem with that. I think he'd be pretty impressed with any vehicle that could achieve all of the creature comforts of your living room and get up to 100 miles an hour in 5 seconds. I think he'd be okay. Again, I kind of feel like Carroll Shelby cared about going fast. Matt Tyler, zoom, zoom. All right, let's talk about some Reddits. The remainder of our podcast is going to be spent talking about some of the changes coming to YouTube, some of the issues facing creators. We talked about this last week with Markiplier. It is getting really ugly out there for your favorite online content creators, especially those who are who have smaller channels. The whole community of up-and-coming content creators that are trying to build towards monetization, and the community of people that their content isn't as popular, so it's not getting spread, disseminated, it's not showing up in search as readily. More than at any other time, active participation is critical to the future of your favorite channels, your favorite streamers, your favorite content creators. I started a little sub. Every podcast has a subreddit. Most podcast subreddits are a way to like tell me how great I am or share news links with me that I might use on the show, and then I'll say your name on the show. The Some Gadget Guy subreddit is all about promoting channels that deserve more attention. It's all about letting creators self-promote their content on Reddit, which is usually a big no-no. If you go to our Android and you submit your own story or your own video, you'll get shut down. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles is my attempt at building an organic community where people can share stories, can share videos, and try to help promote their favorite content creators, help them build some more audience. Every week, we pick up a few more members, a few more followers, a few more subscribers, and I put this call out there every week. If you haven't checked out reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you'll find someone there you've never seen before, and they might become one of your favorite YouTube channels. And again, it's not just for small players. This is also for people who are not doing well under the current algorithm of YouTube and Facebook. So there are channels that are starting to disappear, even though the creators are still putting out high quality content. they're just, you know, they're just not super popular like they used to be. So YouTube is diminishing their reach in search. They won't show up in your YouTube feed of subscribed channels. We'll just tuck them away because we only want you to focus on the most popular tentpole content. That's what's going to keep you using YouTube and Facebook longer. That's what we're going to try and maintain. From Code Exploit, I found at least three channels that I follow now thanks to Reddit. This is exactly the type of interaction I hope to sustain. This subreddit will never be one of the top sources on Reddit for people to interact with. But if we get participation, if we get people engaged, then some of these channels will find their way to more popular subreddits. And that's what I want to build. Not only just discovery, but this will help search engine optimization. This will help results on Google, will help results on YouTube. And then let's say someone puts out a video, it gets a little traction on Glowing Rectangles, it'll show up in our future, or our Android, or our Apple, one of the bigger subreddits, and it'll get promoted even more. And that's the way that we can kind of help these channels grow, by exposing them to communities of people that they might not have ever seen before. So, real quick, I want to talk about the top three stories currently on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Delicious. Number one, a regular at the top of the charts, Gary Explains. I love Gary's channel. Gary is one of the few YouTubers who explains things worth explaining. And when he explains something, he gets it right. It's not like certain popular YouTubers will make a Bluetooth explained video and then get most of Bluetooth wrong. But they keep the video up because it makes them ad dollars. It's fine if tech nerds spread inaccurate information as long as they're popular. That is not Gary Explains. Gary Explains has a video out, Neural Networks for Noobs. It's not as complicated as you might think. A great examination of what's going to be sort of the future of machine learning, algorithmic learning, and how neural networking is going to impact technology. This is always a good watch from Gary Explains. Unfortunately, the second most popular video on Glowing Rectangles of the last week was some dork in a hat who likes to do dumb things on his phone, like edit videos. Like, who would ever want to do anything on an expensive phone? Expensive phones are just for showing off that you spent a lot of money on a phone and for checking your Facebook. And when you check your Facebook, then Facebook turns on your camera and spies on you. There's no other reason why someone would ever want to spend $1,000 on a phone, like displacing laptop use. That's ridiculous. So we'll put this hashtag some punchable face guy, because he's such a jerk and I hate his face. But then in the number three position, we've got TK MyBay. Yeah. How to enable turn on WhatsApp dark night mode theme UI on Android today. This is a tutorial with no roots or no modifications. TK is awesome at those deep dive software features, and especially coming out of XDA. He's an amazing resource for digging into the phone and flashing ROMs and getting the most out of your gadget purchase. And his face is way less punchable than the last guy's. And just to kind of round it out, I was really happy to see, because we see a pretty diverse grouping of content. The number four position, Moto Razr, five things you need to know from Joshua Vergara. A great look at Motorola's new folding phone. And again, TK, a channel with 120,000 subscribers. Josh, a channel with 115,000 subscribers. Gary, 121,000 subscribers. These are big channels, but these are not huge. And when we start scrolling down, you've got LFA reviewing the 10 Hi-Fi, 23,000 subscribers. D. Niman talking about some of the FTC changes coming to YouTube, 60,000 subscribers. We've got Bored at Work with his Motorola folding phone. I mean, someone uploaded Mr. Mobile. I don't think Mr. Mobile really needs our help because he has 840,000 subscribers. But again, we want to see a couple other videos on the Moto. That's some good content to check out. We've got Joshua, I don't know if it's Valour or Valor, but talking about a headphone amp. We've got Board at Work talking about xCloud and gaming. We've got Easy Computer Solutions looking back at the Razer Phone 2. We've got camera comparisons, in-ear monitors, AirPods Pro reviews. We've got Gadget Byte looking at the Realme XT, which, again, you're not going to see that phone review from as many Western or North American reviewers. This is, again, this is so much more diverse, and there is so much more content to check out than if you just go by YouTube, where YouTube is going to look at trending topics and say, well, this is what's popular, so this is what you should watch. I'm always, every week, I am so proud of this community for finding new creators, for promoting new players, and for also helping to promote channels that need the help. Even if it's a channel with a ton of subscribers, not enough these days. A passive view isn't much to help someone out and to encourage them to keep producing cool content for you to watch. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Check it out. I promise you, you're going to find something you've never seen before or someone you've never seen before. And I also want to put that out there. We can always use more participation. I see a lot of people uploading, linking to videos, sharing videos. Those comments matter. The upvotes help a lot. You know, share a video with Glowing Rectangles and then go and click a couple upvotes on other videos that you've liked. Again, all of this helps in that promotion, in that accessibility, and gets this content shared with more people. It makes it more search engine viable when we see that there is some popularity for this kind of content. Every time you visit, make it once a week, make it monthly, whatever. Click a couple up arrows for a minimum of work. It's going to be helping people out. Now, I did get one comment on my thermal throttle video on the Reddit, so I want to read that right now. This is coming by way of Kinda Busy. I wonder what's going on here. I had to read this comment because it started out with like an accusation of me not doing my job properly. Okay, let's getting back to the article. Getting back to the comment. I wonder what's going on here. The optimization is unbelievable. I wish Google would cut the ish, he said a bad word there, and give us ROG level hardware to go along with their software. I know they got to sell the new ish every year, but they're not selling. The Pixel 3a is the only thing that's selling. I love it because it's just all kinds of aggressive and frustrated. And those are some of my favorite comments, especially when we're talking about something like benchmarking and performance. I don't want to spoil my video, but if you couldn't glean from that comment, the Pixel 4 delivered a surprising result in rendering a whole movie on the phone. So maybe you want to check it out. Oh, Matt Tyler. Some gadget guy could be at 100,000 subs before Christmas. I hope so. Let me pull up my YouTube stats right now. So even though I've got tons of videos that are like trending well over 100,000 views, I don't really show up in many. I'm 400 subs away from 100,000 subscribers. Ooh, I don't know what. While I go through some of this YouTube stuff, and I'm gonna make this a part of the Patreon State of the Union, which is going to be at the end of this month. What should I do about 100,000 subscribers? Like at 100,000 subscribers, you get, what is it? The silver play button. You get this little plasticky plaque that says, hey, 100,000 people clicked on your subscribe button. So you're special now. But I doubt that anything's going to change for my recommendations. I doubt anything's going to change for notifications. Very few people ever say that they see my videos when I upload. It feels like such a hollow victory, something that when I started my channel, I was working very hard at trying to accomplish. I cared very much about building that community and interacting with people on YouTube. And now I don't know what to do. Like, I'm still going to be grateful for the people that subscribe to my channel, but I'm less like I there's less of a desire to celebrate that YouTube milestone because YouTube. So I don't know what to do about that. And then also how much we want to bet that as I get closer to 100,000 subscribers, YouTube will just unsubscribe me from a bunch of channels, from a bunch of users. And like, you haven't watched one of his video in a while. So, we'll unsubscribe for you because that happens way more often than it should. Gary the Fireman, everyone spam your contacts. Aditya Anil, come on, gang, we need one to hit 100,000 before Christmas. Broang Bite, hashtag subscribe to some punchable face guy. So Matt Tyler, this is absolutely fair, and this is why I'm so conflicted about it. Matt Tyler says it's special for special to us for you to get there. You work so hard and you deserve it. It's special for the people that engage and participate with my channel that we are reaching these milestones. I'm eternally conflicted about what my relationship with YouTube means for the people that like to engage in broader tech discussion and sometimes like to talk about political tech and some of the deeper aspects of using technology in modern day society. And I mean, just to be completely clear, I'm transparent and fair with all of you that follow, that participate with these types of discussions during the podcast, I have issues and I don't know how to resolve them. And I am very much a contrarian and a take my ball and go home kind of guy. So I do not want to do anything that would seem disrespectful or unappreciative of the people that I like to have these conversations with. And at the same time, how do I use my small sphere of influence to affect positive change? I need to be critical of organizations like Alphabet. So how do I criticize Google and not have that reflect on the people that like to use Google services? The same thing, like when I criticize AirPods, people take that as a personal attack. So I've started getting really cheeky with how I criticize AirPods and the people who use AirPods. But it's so emotional right now, I'm not sure how to reconcile that and how to do it respectfully for all the people that still like to talk to me about technology. From Soulless Geek, you know what? Do nothing. I couldn't care less about 75% of the awards I've received over the years. from Code Exploit. And again, because don't think that the irony of me hosting my podcast on Twitch hasn't been lost on me, having conflicted emotions about working with mega large institutions like Amazon. From Code Exploit, what the hell am I doing watching your stream on Twitch? I created the account just to watch the show. And he commented on that on Mixer. So I'd actually kind of like that idea to percolate. I mean, I want to show appreciation for the people that engage and participate and help me out on a daily basis. I also want to be sensitive to my political issues with mega large institutions. And I don't know what the answer there is. I'm properly grinding gears and locking up on that. Yeah, moving right along. Because this podcast is already going long, and we end up kind of hitting the 2.5 hour mark with every week show anyway. There are a number of changes coming to YouTube, and some of these changes I'm actually kind of grateful. I feel like YouTube has been horrifically negligent in their responsibilities to properly safeguard the consumers of YouTube content. So the FTC is enacting COPPA, Actually, let me pull this up and see if we can get a good definition of what COPPA is, because this is an FTC initiative. Come on. So COPPA stands for the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. And I want to find a good summation. Oh, man, this is not it. If you go to COPPA.org, let me screen share this. This is not going to help the conversation here. This is what you find when you go to COPPA.org. The short title, the title may be cited as the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act of 1998, Section 302, Definitions. In this title, child. The term child means any individual under the age of 13. Operator. The term operator means any person who operates a website located on the internet or an online service and who collects or maintains personal information from or about the users of or visitors to such website or online service, or on whose behalf such information is collected or maintained, where such website or online service is operated for commercial purposes, including any person offering products or services for sale through that website or online service involving commerce. Section 1. that's not gonna help, but the FTC is trying to crack down on abuses of child-focused content, child advertising, and the exploitation of children in videos. It is by design that I think there are currently 8 photos of Lex that are my daughter, Alexandra. We call her Lex because she's awesome. And someday she'll fight that Kryptonian scourge. I think there are 8 photos of Lex that are publicly available. And I want to say only 3 of them, 3 in a video, show her face. I am not any kind of celebrity. I mean, realistically, my channel, my following, my online social interactions, there's not a ton of risk for her to encounter if I were to be sharing her more more regularly. But my wife and I had this sort of meeting of the minds shortly before she was born. We didn't grow up with every waking moment of our lives documented for social media. And it just seemed right to us that we would afford her the same privacy, the same opportunity that we got. There won't be a backlog of the first 10 years of her life publicly available for anyone to consume, to data mine. Maybe she does something embarrassing and she wants to run for office one day. And they can pull up photos from my Instagram feed from, you know, 2015. We didn't want that for her. That is not a commentary on anyone else's decisions on how they are raising their families or sharing their experiences or interacting online. That was just my wife has an overly developed sense of fair play. She gets righteously indignant about hypocrisy. For her, it was important for her to draw that line in the sand because that's how she grew up. And maybe Lex will think that that was terrible. Like, we could have been building her social media channels and she could be internet famous when she turned 16. But for ourselves, we sleep easier at night knowing she can make her own online identity, whatever she chooses to make it, when she is able to contribute to the conversation over how her likeness is used and shared. Pardon the interruption here, but I need to plug another podcast I'm working on with my buddy Andrew. The Geek Book Club is a monthly podcast, which is also an online book club, which should not come as a surprise given the name of the podcast. We pick a book, we read it, and then we talk about it, and you can also join the conversation. If you want a good geeky chat about your favorite geek literature, join Andrew Wallace and I every month on the Geek Book Club, available on iTunes, Google Play, and other fine podcasting services. We've seen way too many abuses of family content on YouTube. Some of it literal abuse being documented in prank videos on children and family videos, which show terrible examples of parenting but get tons of ad clicks. And to the opposite side of the spectrum, when we had ElsaGate and videos that were constructed to trick the algorithm into being popular but showcased some disturbing depictions of social interactions dressed up in Spider-Man and Elsa costumes with very odd themes being displayed. I think YouTube sat out way too long in the same way that Facebook is trying to play the game both ways. Well, we can't be held responsible for the content that people upload, but we will be responsible for the content people upload if advertisers get nervous. So when we have to testify before Congress, I mean, you can't make us responsible for this content, but to our shareholders and to our advertisers, we are absolutely responsible for this content. You cannot have it both ways. And so leveraging COPPA, or COPPA, I've heard it both ways, makes sense to me. This is going to be a rough transition for a number of YouTube channels out there. It sucks really bad because I know of a few channels and I have a couple friends that were primarily interested in making educational content for kids that they will likely be negatively affected by some of the changes that are coming down the pipe. It really shouldn't change anything that's happening on my channel. I got a notification 2 weeks ago that changes were coming. Last week, a new field. When you upload a video, there are all those different fields, like the title of the video, description of the video, categories for the video, and your like keywords and stuff. And I just got a new one pop up. Is this a video that's aimed at children? Does your video feature any children? And I click no on both. But then I do also click, there's one additional field that says, should this be age restricted? And I don't believe any of my content should necessarily be age restricted, but I do not make my videos for kids. The closest is I did a therapeutic build of the Lego Hulkbuster armor, because Hulkbuster is one of my all-time favorite Iron Man storylines where he has to fight the Hulk and he gets his ass handed to him, but you know, he makes this awesome suit of armor out of it. I've always loved the Hulkbuster armor. So I did a sort of a time-lapse build of that Lego model. Off the top of my head, and with over 1,000 videos on my channel, I think that's the only one that could blur into a product that's aimed at children being featured on my channel. But I'm sure YouTube will find plenty of ways to demonetize additional content on my channel. I'm actually appreciative that YouTube is taking a long overdue baby step towards fixing some of the mechanics on their service that are fundamentally broken. On weekends, we let Lex watch cartoons. Sometimes she wants to watch a movie. She really loves Tangled. Rapunzel's her favorite Disney princess. But most of the time, it's usually a mix of like Vampirina and Spider-Man that she likes to watch. And we fire up a TV service and we let her stream an episode or two. And then we go out and do some fun activity or run some chores. There is no way in hell I would ever let Lex interact with YouTube Kids. It is a wasteland of terrible content aimed at children. It is so difficult to cultivate a good feed of responsible creators making good content for kids. And you only need to let autoplay skip ahead a few videos before you're into weird territory or just terribly manipulative toy ads being masked as just like, oh, it's an unboxing. Look at this amazing toy that we're going to unbox, kids, and we're going to get millions of views because we're so excited. Awful. I mean, don't get me wrong. I grew up on Saturday morning television Saturday morning cartoons were just 30-minute toy commercials, but at least there was some pretending that there was a story and an arc, and Optimus Prime would roll in and save the day, and the Thundercats would save Pantera. I mean, like, they would at least try. Maybe less so with Silverhawks, but, you know, like, there was at least an attempt. YouTube Kids is scary for just how gross, manipulative, and off-target some of their content can be. Off the top of my head, there are a handful of just, like, song and dance videos, you know, like, little nursery rhyme-style songs that we like her to she'll request to listen to. There's a yoga channel. I think it's, like, Cosmic Yoga or Kids Yoga. She loves doing Cosmic Yoga. But anything else on YouTube, she is sitting next to me, and we are hand-selecting individual videos to watch. And I'm just eternally grateful that my daughter loves crazy music videos. So instead of her requesting some stupid toy commercial unboxing video, she is much more likely to ask for, hey, daddy, can we watch the OK Go video with the doggies in it? And then we watch, you know, is it White Knuckles from OK Go? Or she really likes the Foo Fighters video where they're in the airplane and they drink the bad coffee and then everyone starts acting funny. You're like, little kid, if you want to watch a Foo Fighters music video, I'm your man. but again, like, free of letting YouTube select this content for her, my wife and I are sitting next to her, watching with her, engaged, and that's how we select the content moving forward. That's the only way you can let your kid interact with YouTube. And of course, I'm talking about raising, she's a toddler. She just turned 4. It's a different experience if you're talking about like a 10-year-old. Hopefully there's been a bit more discerning attitude towards what type of content they might select. But that's essentially what this is bringing. So now we're going to see a number of these types of videos, how-tos, the YouTube Creator and YouTube Academy video channels. It's this kind of stuff. Update for all creators complying with COPPA. If you create content for YouTube, this video is very important to watch as it describes changes to the upload process and all of your existing videos and potentially your monetization with time codes like background on what's happening, what's launching, how to set your audience, answering questions about this update, what is considered made for kids content, how old is a kid? If you set your content as made for kids, what does this mean for your channel? It's going to come with some education. If you're a YouTuber, you are a small business owner. Or especially if you're trying to hit your monetization, you are trying to be a small business owner of an online content creation channel. That's what we're going to be faced with increasingly moving forward. The FTC was right to get involved with videos that were really advertisements but weren't properly disclosed as being sponsored videos. Absolutely. You have to halt disruptive and deceitful business tactics. Now YouTube is finally getting on board, protecting content and helping to internally regulate content that's being made and distributed for kids. From Boang Bite, Baby Shark doot 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 doot. Fat Produce, Beekman's World was a staple of my Saturday mornings. I was definitely more a Bill Nye the Science Guy, but Beekman's World was awesome. I mean, I'm old enough where like the second run broadcasts of Mr. Wizard were regular consumption. And going back, a lot of that stuff still tracks. Like when my daughter gets a little bit older, I'm going to be showing her Beekman's World, Bill Nye the Science Guy, Mr. Wizard, if I can find the OG Mr. Wizards. Like there's still so much value. And I love, so my daughter really likes Daniel Tiger, but she loves Mr. Rogers. And it took us a while to figure this out, but Mr. Rogers is not hyped. Even Sesame Street has this sort of more aggressive edit and music, and it's punchier and it's more vibrant and it's more stimulating. And there are times where my daughter just wants to chill. And it took us a while, like on her own, No, I want to watch Mr. Rogers.
Yes.
Do it. Mr. Rogers is awesome. And everyone in the house gets to breathe a sigh of relief that it's this calm, slowly paced commentary on respecting other people. It's beautiful. I'm really anxious about the Mr. Rogers movie with Tom Hanks coming out. Like, I hope it's good. Every time I see like a story about Mr. Rogers, or if you watch Mr. Rogers' testimony before the Senate, when the Nixon administration was trying to cut funding for PBS, and Mr. Rogers like single-handedly saves PBS and public broadcasting, I don't understand how anyone can watch that video and not come away moved. How he basically turns the tide on a bunch of Nixon appointed officials and gets them to reconsider cutting the funding. It's an amazing piece of American history. And Mr. Rogers is like just an incredible individual that historically needs to be celebrated till the end of time. So back to YouTube. I'm hoping that this won't have an effect on my channel. I'm hoping that electronics, gadgets, technology, tech and politics, there is no pretending. I can't even hide behind, well, I mean, maybe kids might like some of my content. Kids don't care about thermal throttle tests on smartphones. So I'm hoping I'm good. But the frustrating thing about doing business with YouTube is that it's still a massive black box. So we have no guarantee and we have no expectation that that the rules are going to be consistently applied and that we really will know what the rules and penalties will be when we step over the line. Every channel at some point runs into some situation where YouTube has a rule, but it's extremely difficult to know where the line was or what the disclosure was. And it's usually just an automated system that red flagged something and then you get penalized for it. And that's what's most frustrating. When I started talking about net neutrality, I don't know for certain that it was because I was talking about net neutrality, but I started talking about net neutrality, my entire channel was demonetized. And it took a long time to fight to get basic monetization back. My channel metrics plummeted. My search recommendations, my ad revenue, all of that basically shrunk by an extreme factor. I don't know what it was. I don't know what actually flipped the switch. YouTube won't ever tell you. You did bad. We won't tell you why. We won't tell you what you did. You'll just have to figure it out for yourself. But in the meantime, thanks for making content that people like to watch. We'll keep all of the ad dollars from your hard work because we're YouTube. Real quick. Sorry. Tangent. Gary the Fireman, Dave Grohl was on the Whitney Cummings podcast. Good for you. He is the definition of awesome. Dave Grohl was in our neighborhood Ralph's. My daughter was two. We had, I had driven to Ralph's, and the last song that was playing in the car was Razor. Just a really beautiful little guitar ballad. And we walk in and we get our shopping and we're going to the checkout. And in the lane next to me is this dude with an awesome beard and mustache and long hair. And he's just kind of chilling. He's got like two things. I don't even remember what he had in his hands. And I'm holding my daughter and it's Dave Grohl. And you're like, there are so few people, celebrities, famous folks that can really make me like fanboy out. And I couldn't talk to him. I just couldn't. I mean, like, I wanted so desperately just to turn to him and say, like, we were just listening to For Your Honor in the car, and my 2-year-old daughter thinks your music videos are hilarious, and I've been a lifelong fan since your band was formed, since Nirvana, and you're amazing, and I love everything that you do. Would have become the rambling, vomitous expression what I would have said to him. But someone else turned to him and struck up a conversation, and he was just super gracious, and he's signing things as he's getting ready to check out. And like such a wholesome and organic celebrity sighting. And again, Dave Grohl will be on my list of amazing people that I almost but did not meet. Matt Tyler, Dave Grohl is Juan's real bae. I totally should have said hi. I know I should have, but in that moment, knowing that I was about to get back in my car and listen to one of his albums, holding my dog, there was no way I could have been graceful in that situation. And if you've ever worked with celebrities, it's the worst feeling when you get weird. I got weird on Richard Anderson. He was a classic cinema actor. And what's his name? And now I'm forgetting his name. I got weird on Michael York. Michael York was the star of Logan's Run. And he was Basil Expedition in the Austin Powers movies. And he walked into my voiceover booth and I really wasn't prepared. Like, no one told me, oh, by the way, one of the most amazing classically trained Shakespearean actors of British cinema is going to be in your booth today. And I just nerded out on him bad. And then, you know, he leaves and then you just feel awful. Like, I was not a professional in this moment. I should have been a professional because his work and my work rely on me being professional. So I'm sure Dave Grohl is used to people getting weird. I just can't. If I feel like that pressure, I got to back off. We're just going to do something else. But funnily enough, Richard Dreyfuss walks into my booth and he's just a crazy, manic, expressive performer. And I'm cool with that. Weird Al walks into my booth and I'm like, oh my God, you're amazing. And he's like, cool, thanks. And he's just honest and gracious and amazing. And we just get right to work. Clancy Brown was another one, just the best Lex Luthor voiceover. Anyway, not germane to what's going on here. again, that was a whole lifetime of Hollywood work ago, and I don't do that anymore. I want to wrap up this YouTube conversation, and we should wrap up this YouTube conversation because I do believe YouTube is doing the bare minimum, but they are actually taking steps to try and improve some of the mechanisms of their platform. That I think will be a benefit. I would say, depending on the channels that you follow, be patient, because a lot of channels are going to be going through sort of a freak out mode, just trying to absorb and understand what these changes and rules might mean for the content that they produce. At the same time, we still need to be critical of YouTube as an institution and an organization, because I think that there's going to be a secondary fallout for a number of channels in the near future, like in the next couple years. If you've been watching any of the videos, my reviews, my editorials that I've been posting to YouTube recently, you might have noticed that I've stopped using music in my videos. Music licensing is one of the most ruthlessly difficult aspects of creating online content to wrap your brain around. It is a horrific minefield of lawyers, of laws, of politics. And if you make one misstep, your hard work, the monetization for your hard work evaporates, just disappears. There have been a number of companies and a number of like stock photo sites and solutions that have cropped up in this modern era to try and make music licensing more easier, so that you have safe catalogs of music that you can interact with. The problem is, all of those ideas, all of those companies really only have a short-term licensing idea in mind. Content online kind of needs to exist in perpetuity. If I were making a contract and I used to write contracts for voice talent, a company would come to me and say, well, like, we're going to put this video up on the internet. We need their likeness and we need their voice in perpetuity till the end of time. And so then it would become a negotiating point. I can't give you that. I can't give you an actor's voice forever. There has to be some end point. And then it's up to the actors and the lawyers and the agents to make sure that that's being held to. But usually I would write, if an actor were going to use a voice in an internet video, I would say it's around $2,000 for 2 years of use. And at that point, then you need to have some other conversation, renegotiation, or some sort of, you know, like the agent or the actor can sign off on additional use after that. But we would never let them just own the actor's likeness and voice forever. That was a big no-no in casting and in working for a talent agency. Music licensing is kind of the same. There are catalogs of music now. There are catalogs of music that I used to use that are now falling out of the original licensing agreements that we started with. So it came to a head about 6 months ago where I uploaded a video, and thankfully, whenever I upload a video, I'm now on a delay. Like I make it stay on YouTube for 2 or 3 days, excuse me, 2 or 3 days before I publish, because YouTube likes to demonetize my videos. So I need to like wait for it to go through 2 rounds of their whatever automatic checking YouTube does, so that I can then dispute if the video gets demonetized before I put it out public. I started getting a handful of videos demonetized that I had used a stock audio and stock video site to pull the audio from. These are older videos. But they didn't pull the music from the YouTube audio library. When you're a YouTube creator, there's an audio library that YouTube clears the music for. So you can go and download these audio tracks. You can use the audio in your video on YouTube. Supposedly, they've cleared that agreement for you, so you can trust this is safe music to put into your videos. So I started getting a handful of videos demonetized because the music I was using fell out of the catalog from the stock site. Someone else picked up the license for it, and then they were putting out content ID matches on those videos. Older videos, none of them were really performing all that well. I basically just marked them all private. And I want to say I was maybe affected for 4 videos. And then I had uploaded a video that's what alerted me that this was now a problem. So that got demonetized, or I got the copyright notification. I pulled that video down, put different music on it, re-uploaded that video. Everything was groovy. The problem is Google cannot guarantee that the music in their audio library will forever be safe from copyright claims. So I want to just, I'm not going to play any of his video here because of copyright. This is from a channel, Matt Lone. He does a bunch of YouTube gaming videos. He does a ton. Since 2011, but for years, he's been making these great Kerbal Space Program videos. And now I don't even know how many, but a substantial number of his videos have now been copyright flagged because of a song that he downloaded from the YouTube audio library. One of the songs that Google made available had a sample in it. That sample was not properly cleared, and now the copyright holder of the original song is going after any video that uses the song that YouTube supplied. So you can go to the YouTube Creator Academy, and they've got like 6 or 7 videos about copyright and how to use music. And one of the main things they point to is if you make videos on YouTube, here's this awesome audio library that we clear the content for you to use in your YouTube videos. Except they didn't clear the song properly. And now channels like this one are getting dozens. Sometimes there are going to be hundreds and hundreds of videos that are going to be copyright claimed. The monetization is going to go to the copyright holders. The content creator is not going to make any money from their work anymore. And it's Google's fault. Google did not do their due diligence. YouTube did not properly clear this song. And now people are going to get burned for it. So nothing is safe. I stopped putting music in my videos before now. I am going to continue to go audio-less unless I've written the song myself and I've done it off of loops and samples that won't get me flagged for copyright because other people might have used those loops and samples. This is really scary and dangerous territory, and there isn't a good solution. I know there are subscription services, like you can pay a monthly or a yearly fee to license music. But what happens when you stop licensing that music? All of the videos that have used that music from that licensee are now going to be subject to copyright. Your entire channel just dies the second you want to stop paying that subscription service fee. Now we can't even trust the YouTube audio library has properly cleared and maintains the copyright for all of the videos that you might make. I still get traffic on videos that I put out years ago. And I will probably continue to get traffic on videos I put out years ago. Like one of my more popular videos is on the Huawei Mate 10. I still get a ton of traffic on, I think it's like a 5-year-old video on a silly little Wacom stylus that I don't even think Wacom makes anymore. But I get traffic on that video. Like, that still contributes to what little ad monetization I still get on YouTube. And if that music were to be, you know, suddenly fall out of the YouTube audio library copyright umbrella, then that video's dead. And I don't even know, I don't think I still have the source files to re-render that video and remove the music. And I have, how many videos do I have on my channel? Hold on, let me just look. I always forget. Videos. Will it not tell me in here? Or maybe I need to go to my dashboard. I can't even find it. I think I'm somewhere around like 1,400 videos. But it's a bit. It's a lot. So if a handful of songs, or even just one song that I used to use a lot, like as part of any kind of intro or a regular part of content, were to get flagged, that would be work. I'd just be out. Like, I'd just pull those videos. I'm not going to sit here and try and recreate them, even though I could still maybe get some ad revenue on them. I'm just burned. So it's bad. This stuff is getting increasingly more difficult to maneuver, and YouTube is not giving us the tools to properly manage this stuff, but we're guilty until we're proven innocent. So here's the example. This Matt Lone individual, he's got dozens of videos flagged. He has to go through manually, one by one, and dispute the copyright, because he's not wrong. YouTube says they cleared that song, but legally, there's nothing YouTube can do because they don't have the license for it anymore. So Matt's really out. And if he disputes these, the dispute just goes to the copyright holder. YouTube is not a part of the conversation at all. They don't have anything to do. They take his dispute and they give it, I think it's Sony, and they give it to Sony, and Sony goes, no. And then so they take Sony's no and they give it back to Matt and they say, Sony said no. They own the copyright, so your money now goes to Sony. Do you want to dispute this further? And Matt can say, I'd like to dispute this further, but what happens if I dispute this further and it still gets turned down? And then YouTube says, if you dispute this further, then you could get a strike on your channel. That's what we can do. We can't talk to Sony for you, but if you bug us again, then you get a strike. So that also kills a bunch of stuff on your channel. It makes your channel show up less in search. And then if you get 3 strikes, then we just gut. You just get removed from YouTube. Your channel's dead. We gotta do something else. This is not sustainable. This is awful. So that's the frustrating aspect of doing work on an online medium. I've mentioned this before, and I'm going to continue to talk about this, and I'm going to strategize with folks on my Patreon. I want to devalue YouTube as the primary social interactive space for my future videos. By the end of next year, I want to have built a different solution for interaction and for commentary and for discussion, where the videos are still going to be a part of a YouTube strategy, but we can do other things and we can go other places to hold the discussion, hold the conversation, interact, share, contribute, participate. If we keep acting like YouTube's the only place, what else are you going to do? Can't do anything else. Just like I was making fun of Markiplier last week. I really wish YouTube would stop punching all my friends in the genitals, but I make too much money on YouTube, so I guess there's nothing we can do. Then we've got bigger problems, you know, like this stuff is all properly dead then. If there's no competition and we can't make our own competition and we can't build our own communities and we can't have our own discussions, then this stuff gets real ugly real fast. So if it's a social media strategy paired with a different type of video hosting, supplemented by YouTube, Twitch, Mixer, Dailymotion. I hear they're real big in France. If I can't spread all that stuff out and make this stuff a bit more accessible and a bit safer, then you got to stop making videos online. That's like the last solution I can come up with is just go, just leave. And we're seeing handfuls, small little handfuls right now of channels that might not survive this sort of new era of popular YouTubery. So it's pretty gross. Matt Tyler, YouTube can't even do the simple jobs properly, FFS. Matt Tyler, again, don't do what Matt Tyler is asking. Everyone here, go back to Juan's first video and watch every single video he's made. Don't do that. Those early videos, not so good. Gary the Fireman, get a cheap Casio keyboard and let your daughter compose music for you. She loves playing on cheap keyboards. I might need to do that. Gary, that's actually not a horrifically bad idea. So I'm actually at like 1,200 videos, but only 1,100 of them track. And then I've had to pull numerous videos. And then there are a bunch of videos that are private or unlisted. So you won't get to see the full count of my videos publicly. But if there are problems with some of the music in my videos, I'm not going to go back to fix them. I'll just need to move on. So, folks, that was a pretty heavy block of difficult news stories to tackle. So I want to thank everyone that's still hanging in there. Y'all are troopers. And we had a rough week last week. This is a rough week this week. I'm sorry. I kind of brain farted how I wanted to wrap this up. But I'm probably going to be taking next week off for a full main podcast. It's Thanksgiving week. Thanksgiving is my absolute favorite holiday of the year, and I want to be able to spend it with family, prepping, cooking. Thanksgiving in my family is like 4 days of prep for 3 days of eating and leftovers. So I might try and pop in and just do like a light casual, like let's all wear our pajamas kind of stream next Monday. But I also might not be in a place that has good internet access because the telecoms don't want to spend any money on less profitable consumers. I might be in a part of the country which might not sustain a live stream, but I'll try. Right now, I'm going to say no proper show. But if we can do like a loose hangout, casual get together kind of a thing, maybe we can make something like that happen. That could be fun. But that's also why I want to plug leaving from our housekeeping. If you can, I really loved this headset. This was one of the happiest reviews for me to put together this year. Audio Technica makes amazing audio products. I've been very skeptical of gaming wireless gear, and this is a phenomenal example of how you can cut the cord and still have tremendously good audio fidelity. And I'm giving one away. So I will announce the winner of this headset on Thanksgiving, because this is tech I am thankful for, and I am thankful for people who like good audio tech. So this is the gig. And Matt Tyler, some of you can't enter. I appreciate that, but you could still give it a share, because you probably know people who can enter. I'm just saying. I know you've shared it. I'm just picking at you. But give it a perusal, give it a share, support. If you actually look through the list of entries, you'll see that there are entries I want to reward people with for better participation than just, I like to tweet on the Twitters. So that's the gig. I like it. I really think people will like it. I've got a bunch of things coming out on the channel. I'm trying to shoot aggressively ahead for the ROG 2. I'm going to try and send Matt's phone back to him this week. Matt Tyler in our chat is letting me borrow his ROG 2. I have my LG G8 stuff coming out. I am almost done with the script for the Pixel 4 camera review. And then I'm going to try and back that up very, very quickly with the Pixel 4 phone review, because I think I'm going to be one of the few techies out there who's not just going to pan it, especially considering what a monster performer it is. It's absolutely incredible performance out of that phone. And I'm not being facetious. It is a scary fast performer. So, lots of stuff coming to the channel. Wrapping up the year, there's going to be a Patreon State of the Union at the end of this month. So be on the lookout for that if you're on the Patreon, or if you're in the patron Discord. We'll talk about what we want to do to host a Thanksgiving Patreon live stream. And I'm missing something. Oh, and I've got some audio kit coming out. Some cool mobile tech. A lot of it's going to be iPhone focused, but other ways that we can improve audio for videos and mobile content production. So some stuff that I think is going to be really cool to showcase there too. Folks, I have talked way too much. Let's wrap this up. Thank you so much. Everyone who's still on this live stream and seeing Gary and Aditya and Matt and Boangbite and Soulless Geek and Andrew, and it's Romper Room, but in the best, geekiest possible way. If I don't get a chance to live stream, especially, I mean, if you're in North America, if you're in the United States, I hope you all have a fantastic turkey day, that you get to spend some time with people you care about, people who care about you. And that you get to spend some part of any one day next week shoving awesome food into your face. It's my favorite holiday. My favorite holiday is the holiday where we shove the most food into our faces as we can. But that's one of the hallmark ways that my family shows that they care about each other, is making a ridiculous amount of food. So I hope any of you, even if it's not Thanksgiving, get to participate with something like that as we start to get towards the end of the year. And next week, even if you don't have American Thanksgiving to celebrate, tell someone you care about them. Go plan a lunch date with someone you haven't spoken to in a while. These opportunities are fleeting, and I think we ignore them, and we think that we'll have time to do something later on, and then we'll push it again, and then later on maybe never happens. So don't let that happen to you. Folks, you know where you can catch me normally, Monday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Next week, taking a break, maybe doing a pajama podcast next week. We'll see. But spend some time with your family. Spend some time with your loved ones, and break bread, because it's the best way to spend time with people is eating some good food. In the meantime, catch me on the socials, you know, on the YouTube, the Twitters, the Twitch, the Facebooks, not so much. Less so on the Instagrams, and I will catch you back here next week. No, I will catch you back here in some future date for another episode of the SGGQA podcast. I'm on my script, and my script doesn't work for next week. So I care about y'all. I want you to have a phenomenal week, and maybe a phenomenal holiday week with your technology. I want you to do awesome with your tech. I want you to be awesome with your tech. Take care. I love y'all. I'll catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, The smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.